Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 125 of Season 7 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Eric Paul of Everything is Primary Source podcast. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
It's good to be here, and thank you once again for having me on your wonderful analytical trip through Die Hard with a Vengeance from start to absolute finish. Like, we are going to, this is when a lot of people tune out is definitely at this point in the credits. Once the cast goes by, they're done. But I'm glad to be here.
Because again, most people don't recognize any of the names or anything like that, but that's why it's fun going through the names.
Absolutely.
So minute 125 begins with the production supervisor credit and ends with of 13 production assistants in the middle of the credits of this movie. And I mean, I think I mentioned this in the past, you know, I 30 some odd years ago, I worked just for a few months at a computer company doing, you know, QA. And it was, they had like an educational CD-ROM that was going out. And it amazed me, the whole idea of credits, because here you have, you know, on a CD, there was the whole idea of that you needed to make credits. And the fact that when I was starting to work on this product, so, you know, I was supposed to, you know, send in all these bug reports. And then someone told me, you have to send in a bug report that your name doesn't appear in the credits, you know, in order to change that, because here you are working on this movie. So therefore, you know, you should be listed in the credits. And I was like, oh, working on this, not the movie, working on this, you know, educational CD. And it was, to me, it was like, wow, I finally get my name, you know, on a credit of something, you know. And then here I am now, you know, on so many, having so many credits on IMDb just from my, you know, just from this little show that I do.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think, such a reflection of just a culture of documentation, copywriting, giving people their due and proper. I mean, it's such a, it can be a task to try to make sure you recognize everybody, but it's something that's, I think, a pretty important component of creating art or any kind of media, where it's like, you know, you don't get all the credit. Like, as I said, you know, I'm a teacher and I will plenty of times assign students projects to do, and it's usually group projects, and inevitably they get in arguments about, or, you know, will come to me like, oh, so-and-so's not doing, you know, their fair share or whatever. And I point out to them a lot of times, like, well, not everybody does the exact same amount of work. So once again, look at a movie credit, right? Look at any movie. They're not doing the equal job. They're not doing, you know, some people's jobs may be, you know, a fifth of what somebody else is doing. It doesn't mean that they, and that might decide the placement on the actual credit list of where they are and what they actually do. But if they took any part at all, their name needs to be on there. They need to get the credit. They need to get that actual, and it's such a, past summer I took a course through the Library of Congress, and we talked in one particular class about things like fair use and copyrights, and, you know, what you can use publicly and what you can't use and things like that. And this seems to be of a very similar nature, where it's somebody's work, what they did, needs to be acknowledged and needs to be documented somewhere, if it's for payment purposes, if it's for resume purposes, or just because of the, you know, who knows how long it goes back to write down in the scrolls, this is who did what. And I'm just curious sometimes, like, what's the cutoff? You know, we talked yesterday about how, you know, this Phantom Fisherman was credited, but then 26 stunt people weren't. And you know, when you make a movie like this with all this extended group of people, like you have production assistants. I'm picturing those are the people that are running errands for
Getting coffee for everybody.
top brass of the movie. Right. Like, does the person who's poured the coffee, do they get credited? Like, you know, a caterer, if they, you know, if somebody just walked by the set and interacted with somebody for 10 seconds, do they get a credit? Like, at what point are we, you know, do we say, no, that's the end of the credits? But you know, and again, with a film like this, it just shows you how elaborate and how far out the tentacles in a way go of in all directions. It's like, or I may be a better analogy, be like the roots of a tree, right? We, the viewers, just watch the tree, but below the surface,
But that tree can't stand without all the roots,
right?
right?
And these are the roots. These are the, you know, those very small ones sometimes that extend all the way out, but they are still what allows for this to find its way to the movie theater and so forth.
That's actually a great analogy. I really like that. I like that analogy.
I like making analogies, so any other time I get a chance to, I will.
Okay. All right. So, as I said, we start with the production supervisor, and we go through the I always find it funny that they have the second assistant director and the first, then the second, third, and all those other things, And then we have like the different like storyboard artists and the set decorators, and then there's someone that's called a lead man, or maybe it's a leadman. I don't know how you would pronounce that. In for this movie, it's someone named Kevin B. McCarthy, and it just got me curious as to what that job is. Do you have any idea what a lead man is?
I would always think, I mean, if I'm thinking of like a technical job, I would picture somebody with like maybe not a rope, but a cable of some kind, like leading it along. But after looking it up, I know what it is, and it's not that
Oh, you looked it up on your own also? Or you looked it up
just
now?
right
Oh,
now,
okay.
yeah.
I was like, all right, well, that would be great if you looked it up also before. Right. So the idea is it's basically the person who's in charge of dealing with continuity and props and things like that, making sure that the set director is in charge of telling him what to do, but he just needs to make sure that everything is in the right place on the set, when it comes to different props and stuff like that. So I again, you don't think about the fact that you need someone to do a position like this. It amazes me that someone even thought about this type of job. I mean, it makes sense, but it's not something that you would normally think about that they would have in a movie.
Yeah.
And here
And
we are.
it's one of those things where it's like layered throughout Hollywood's history that yeah, they didn't make a, I guess there's more than a few movies throughout the history of Hollywood that deal with, you know, people that might have like a cut with blood on their, you know, something, or you know, get dirty, and so they don't want to have it super distracting. They're like, whoa, the last time I saw that character 10 seconds ago, he had a completely different, you know, you know, that blood dripping down was on the other side of his face. So it doesn't make any sense now. But it's like Hollywood as an industry, just like any other industry, learns as it goes. And so now that's just another job on the set that's just like an endless supply. It's like, you know, somebody opens a business, they're thinking to themselves, oh yeah, it's simple. I'll just, you know, sell, you know, whatever it is they want to sell. And then they realize after even opening the door that it's, there's so many, just, you know, an almost endless list of things you have to think about, you know, people you have to deal with, different kinds of just everything. And it's like, this is just one of those examples of how huge of a business making just one movie is.
Not just how huge of a business, but also how large how many people you need to be able to do this.
Right. And I kind of wonder if a job like that, which I would imagine comes down to taking lots of Polaroids, throughout the day, and you know, especially going on break and stuff like that. If that's what that person is, that all they do in Hollywood, or is that the job they got on this movie? Like maybe in other movies they do other kinds of jobs, but you know, or is this something they aspired to, or is this just them getting their foot in the door to do something else behind the scenes? It's a curious thing.
Well, Kevin McCarthy, who has this job on this movie, he has 30 IMDb credits in the art department. It's part of the art department. Okay, so the question then is he doing this in every movie or not? I didn't check what his actual job for each of these movies was, but he also did Star Wars Episode One. He did The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. You know, so he does have some pretty high caliber credit under his belt here.
Yeah, so that must have been, and it might have been one of those things that maybe, you know, like you said, just like somebody that's in an art department for a movie, maybe they just kind of, you know, like, I'll be the leadman this, or leadman or whatever it's pronounced, you know, this movie, but next time it'll be, because I'm assuming they all work with each other too. There's probably a lot of the crew that, you know, go from one job to the next together.
Right. So in The Dark Knight, he was the standby painter.
Okay.
Maybe that means he's standing on the side if they need to touch something up or whatever. That was also the job he had in Phantom Menace. Hmm. So he mostly on, let's see, on Quiz Show, he was also the lead man. But he's mostly like been a set dresser for a lot of movies in the 80s. He was the set dresser. He was a property master. You know, so he had a lot of different jobs within the, you know, the same area, you know, because it's all connected to the art department.
That sounds like a fun job, honestly, to be in the working with sets and design and trying to, you know, especially in all those, you know, some of the movies he's worked on are completely fantasy. You know, so your mind can kind of go to lots of different places, but then others like this one are set in reality. So, you know, having that versatility and that flexibility to do, you know, very imagination based things or, you know, trying to keep it as real as possible. Sounds like a fun challenge for a job.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I see that he also has been working on Law and Order Special Victims Unit. And he's still doing that as of recording. He did 229 episodes as the either leadman, the set dresser, or the set dressing leadman. So I guess that's all interchangeable. You know, he's in charge of making sure, as you said, probably a lot of scenes dealing with making sure the blood is on the right side of the person's mouth.
He's probably, you know, listening like to this right now and be like, finally, I'm getting my recognition. I've been working as a leadman for how long, and I finally get these guys to talk about it.
Well, Kevin, we're proud of the work that you've done.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. So then when you continue with the credits, so we get a number of the camera operators are mentioned here. Then we get into a little bit of the casting credits, and then we have some of the editors and then the gaffers. And, you know, then you have the grips, the key grips. Is that something, isn't that thing you mentioned yesterday?
Yeah,
you
want to talk about? I mean, the grip? Not that I want to talk about forever, but I it's one of those jobs that, and I've heard stand-up comedians talk about this and other people, but a key grip and a best boy, I mean, for those of us out of the industry that are just viewers of it, we have literally, I'm like what is... what is that, you know? And so I looked it up. It makes perfect sense. The key grip is kind of like the second in command to the director of photography, where they are the ones who are physically, if not themselves, maneuvering the cameras around. They're directing the move and making sure all the equipment that they need to to move these cameras about. And for a film like this, which has some pretty spectacular shots and a lot of movement throughout the movie, high speed components to it, I can't imagine the job of Key Grip or any of the grips or the best boy, which is part of that crew, having an easy go of it. It seems like a pretty challenging job for a film like this one.
Yeah, I would think so. But, I guess these guys are the best in the industry to be dealing with Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Right. Well, I'm assuming it's similar to what the casting people do for the players in the movie. I've heard directors talk about, like, directors of photography and which ones they like to, you know, they work with the most. I'm assuming it's probably the same kind of thing on the, you know, assemble your crew, you know, like get your, almost like a ship's captain, ready to set sail. They want their best, which, by the way, I'm sure you know this, but for people listening that don't, that's in the old theaters, especially in port cities, those are the guys who worked on the curtains and, you know, moving all of the sets and stuff around. That was their side job, was sailors who were in port, because they already worked with the riggings on the ships all the time. So they got extra money doing that way. So I'm assuming with movies, it's a similar thing where the people in charge, like the Key Grip, or the director of photography, or all these other, you know, secondary but still leadership roles, have people that they've worked with before and know who could handle this kind of high expectations and very intense style movie making. You know, a romantic comedy probably doesn't have anywhere close to the kinds of demands on a film crew, because those cameras are huge in some cases. You know, they're on dollies, or they're moving all over the place. They're not, what we use in, you know, public life with our handheld cameras and stuff like that.
Right. Or phones.
Right. Especially nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true, and you don't really think about that normally. And then the credits continue, and we get the location manager and the location scouts. And just to remind everyone here, the location manager, Pamela Thur, and the location scout, Robin Sampson, their names were used on the dump trucks. It was the Sampson and Thur company that we talked about. Then after that, they start listing all the hairstylists. Now, I just find this really funny. You have Jeremy Irons' hairstylist and makeup person, a woman by the name of Linda DeVetta. And then Bruce Willis actually has two hairstylists. You have Carol Michael and Audrey Futterman. Now, I didn't look up what these people do because it doesn't make a difference. But from the perspective of what we're talking about here, but I just find it, I just thought it was hilarious that Bruce Willis, who has a lot less hair than Jeremy Irons, mm-hmm. has two hairstylists.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Irons only has one. And he's an Oscar-winning actor at this point.
Yeah. You know? You'd think it'd be zero hairstylists for Willis, but, I guess that very identifiable, receding hairline of Willis's was something they needed to manage throughout. Maybe one of them put some kind of tonic on there every day and the other one combed it.
Exactly. And then the credits continue to deal with the different makeup artists. And then there's something that just jumped out at me, and it says DGA trainee, Jennifer DeAngela. Okay, so she has 16 IMDb credits. So it got me wondering, what is the idea of a DGA training? Now, DGA, for anyone who, it's the Directors Guild of America. So I actually looked it up, and they actually have what's known as a training program for the DGA. It's possible to join the DGA by meeting certain employment criteria. You might also consider applying to the Assistant Directors Training Program, jointly sponsored by the DGA and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. This exciting program accepts a limited number of candidates each year to participate in on-the-job training to become second assistant directors. Candidates compete for a program position through a rigorous selection process. Once accepted, a trainee completes 350 or 400 days of paid hands-on work experience on actual film and television projects in HMOs, provided he or she also attends a number of mandatory seminars on various aspects of the industry. Each trainee who satisfactorily completes the program requirements is invited to join the guild. So again, I just thought this is great that they have this type of program that, you know, she's basically, I guess for lack of a better phrase, she's probably like the gopher here for McTiernan. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that McTiernan is supposed to, you know, take her under his wing and show her the ropes of, you know, giving her the opportunity of being on set and seeing how these things work, you know, so that she can later on
do things. Is she trainer or trainee on the...
Trainee.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, if that's trainer, then she... Yeah, but yeah, that's... I mean, it underscores something else we said yesterday. It's like each one of these things is a story, right? Like that's just one little line on, you know, the back end of the credits on Die Hard with a Vengeance. Yet it's, you know, who knows what the program looked like in 1995, but it's like it's so specific, right? Like I assumed an assistant director was just kind of like a co-pilot on an airplane. They could probably do it themselves, but they just but to think that they actually have a training program to get to the assistant level, and I always pictured Hollywood as being not as technical like that. I mean, I guess when you deal with the unions and guilds, maybe they have their standards and licensing and stuff like that, but I always kind of picture it as much more merit-based, that, you know, if you can prove yourself as a great filmmaker, it doesn't matter if you are, you know, somebody that learned like James Cameron did, you know, driving a truck and then Xeroxing all of his, you know, notes on filmmaking from the library, or somebody that, you know, actually went to school for it. And it's like, it doesn't matter. You just make great art, and then that's how you get your jobs. I didn't recognize that there was, you know, such a system in place.
Right. No, definitely. I mean, this is the whole idea of the film industry is you know, mentor relationship.
Yeah.
You know, most of these jobs are jobs that you learn on, you know, on the set. You know, because it's all the practical work and stuff like that. And,
right.
You know, people are staying in the industry for many, many years, decades, you know, doing everything that they need to do here and stuff like that. So it's just very cool. Then, I mean, it's funny that you mentioned, you said, you know, for each of these lines, we could talk so much about it. I mean, think about it. We're skimming through this, doing it minute by minute. You know, we're skimming through this minute. And but if we were to talk about all these people, we would be sitting here for hours,
right?
Just on 1 minute with the number of people, all the various stories about everything that these people have done over the years. Then the next credit after the DGA trainee is the script supervisor. Okay, mm-hmm. A woman named Robin Squibb, who has 32 IMDb credits, and again, her job is to make sure to check for continuity, mm-hmm. making sure that you know that no one screwed up. You know, I always remember my good friend Alan Sanders. He did Blazing Saddles minute by minute, and you know, he had an interview with one of the actors on it. I'm trying to remember his name right now. Can't remember the name of the actor, but he was talking about the fact that there was this particular scene where it was very hot, so he took his cowboy hat off, mm-hmm. and then you know, they finished filming that part of it, and then they were going to continue partying. They would continue to film. And then the script supervisor came over and said, "I'm sorry, you didn't have your hat on before. You can't put your hat on now." You know, that type of thing. So I just thought that's a lot of it's very interesting. That's a job for somebody who is very, very technical and good with making sure that all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted, you know, when it comes to
that. Especially with a fast-paced movie that takes place over the course of a day, essentially, that's a pretty important job.
That's right. That's right. Then we continue with the credits. We have a unit publicist and a technical advisor, and then they start with all the assistants, which is one of the things I wanted to point out here about the fact that, you know, they have assistants to Andy Vajna, who's one of the producers, assistants to John McTiernan. Vajna has two, McTiernan has one, Bruce Willis, he's got two, Jeremy Irons has one, Buzz Fightchens. Yeah. Has two, okay, and one of them. Did you see the names of them? One of them is Dino De Laurentiis.
And I was like, wait a second, familiar.
Isn't he a producer himself? You know, like, what's the story there? And I actually figured out that this is the grandson of the Dino De Laurentiis that we all know, who was, you know, a big producer, and his you know, grandson followed in his footsteps, and he was 23 at the time this movie came out, because he was born in 1972, and he unfortunately passed away in 2003 from melanoma.
Well, that's too bad.
But again, the idea that this is, you know, the grandchild of a producer that is given, you know, this opportunity to work on Die Hard with a Vengeance as an assistant.
I know that Die Hard, of course, is a New York movie, and I'm assuming they pulled a lot of the crew from New York, and South Carolina is mentioned on there too for some reason. But
there are a lot of the action scenes that are done, that were filmed in South Carolina.
But I think about when I go through IMDb, which I'm sure we're similar in that we go down rabbit holes on IMDb all the time. But the sheer number of people that are sometimes even, you know, older people in Hollywood now were born and raised in Southern California. You know, they're all LA. And so it's like in their blood that they work in movies. Like, that's just what they do. You know, I'm trying to think of other parts of the country and, you know, what, like, specific jobs that are there. But like, I have a friend who's from LA, and she, you know, she had nothing to do with the movie industry, but she's like, yeah, plenty of people. I think her brother or brother-in-law or something is, you know, works in one of the companies. And she's like, yeah, it's just the kind of jobs that your neighbors would have. You know, it was, and when you see how many people were born in LA on their IMDb credit, it's like, well, then I guess this is your family was probably in the industry somehow, and that's why you're doing something similar. And there's our proof right there. That it was actually the assistant section that I was really looking for names that would jump out, because that was the one I was thinking. I'm like, that might be the foot in the door type folks. Like, I was, you know, maybe hoping to find you know, somebody who's ended up being a pretty big actor, like a, you know, John Favreau or something, like, you know, was getting coffee for Bruce Willis back then, you know, just before Swingers came out. But it's like that's the list that I was interested in seeing. Oh, maybe there might be somebody, but other than that, I don't think there's any other, you know, well-known names.
No, there's no one who really jumped out at me with that either. Like one of the assistants was also an assistant to Eddie Murphy during, you know, when they were filming Another 48 Hours a few years earlier. One of them actually became a producer, and he's produced 42 movies. So, you know, maybe he's the biggest success here from this list of people. I don't know. And then if you keep going down, you see different people dealing with the production. You have the production coordinator, production secretaries, caterer. You mentioned that yesterday, and I always find it funny that the caterer is always a company. It's not like a one person.
Right.
Here it's Something's Cooking, which is a pretty interesting name for that. And then you get the craft services. Someone explained to me once, and I don't know if this is 100% true or not, that the idea of a caterer is a caterer deals with the food, and the craft service deals with having snacks around the whole time.
Okay. Stuff like so that. Not the, like, the big meals or anything like that.
That's my understanding, but I could be wrong. And then you have Mr. Willis's security, a guy named Avi Corrine, and he is actually a bodyguard, and he has been a bodyguard for Bruce Willis, Mel Gibson, Brad Pitt, Will Smith, Tom Cruise. So he's got a very high-powered resume if you look at it.
It's
And then if you keep going down a little bit, you then see the set doctor, Dr. Lewis Katz, which I wasn't able to find very much about him except the fact that he has been listed as the set doctor on 47 different movies in IMDb. They just want to have someone
Yeah.
there, on set to mend you up if you
I
need
wonder
it.
if he got confused a lot on a movie like this with people all bloodied up and stuff like that, and if they're actually in need of his services, or if maybe there's another job on the credits, like somebody who actually, like this person's actually hurt, go see the doctor. This person's just wearing makeup.
Who knows? And then the next credit after that is the aviatrix.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard that word before?
Only from like the 1920s when women were flying airplanes. Like Amelia Earhart's listed as an aviatrix.
That's right. A female pilot is an aviatrix as opposed to an aviator, which is just hilarious. So you have Georgia Holtzman, who's the aviatrix here. And then if you jump down two more credits after that, you have the dialogue coach, which is Misha Hauserman. Okay, now Misha Hauserman is also an actor in this movie. He plays the character of Misha,
Oh,
who's
right.
the he's the spotter in Yankee Stadium, and then he's the driver on the Sawmill River Parkway,
Yeah.
who ends up getting killed by John. Okay, but I just find it hilarious that he's also the dialogue coach.
Multifaceted, I suppose.
Apparently, because I don't know why I think of him like Schwarzenegger type of thing. That he's got this like deep Austrian accent and stuff like that. And then for me to think about the fact that he's the dialogue coach, like okay, say I'll be back. I don't
Yeah,
know.
I'm curious. I mean, maybe the dialogue for Simon's group of baddies, but yeah, that's a curious one.
Yeah. And then if you keep going down a little bit more, we get to the production assistants, where once again there are names here that you would hopefully recognize, but cannot. Did you recognize any of the names?
No, and that's what I was hoping to have one to jump out, but hopefully they had a long career in Hollywood and continue that career to this day, and maybe have done, and I guess maybe that's being a little bit shallow of us to assume that they aspire to be stars. They may very well just want to work in movies, and maybe they're on a cast list somewhere else for best boy or lead men or something.
Right. So the only one that jumped out at me here was the Michael Pitt, who he actually has in IMDb 56 credits as the second unit or assistant director. So I guess it didn't hurt being on Die Hard with a Vengeance, as the as a production assistant.
No, must have been the lead in.
Yeah, that's right. And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you want to point out that you want to discuss?
Not particularly for this section. I know that I mean, again, this is just not to reiterate over and over again just how almost like overboard the credits seem to get by the 1990s. I guess, and I'll use this another opportunity just to talk a little bit about what my show does, is like those can be, that can show you kind of the status of movies like this by 1995. So you think about 1995, the action adventure movie or the action movie like this is relatively new. I'm maybe like 10 years old. They've been doing these kinds of things. And, you know, the original Die Hard is among the first of its of the kind. So it's like, you know, here's the, this is how you do it, right? You need this many people and this many jobs, and they're doing all these different things. That's how you make a successful action movie. So in the mid 1990s, I mean, 1995 is a great year to really size up that decade, because it's right in the middle. This is the method, right? And this is the ingredients you need to make a successful, fun, exciting, suspenseful action movie.
Okay, that is completely fair. Once again, we have nothing to talk about with the script here. So today's segment is known as Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson performances.
All right.
So, Eric, why don't you once again start with number five and work your way up?
All right. So I'm going to start with Revenge of the Sith. And I realize he played Mace Windu in all three of the prequel Star Wars movies, but the scene.
No, you have to pick one anyway, so that's fine.
Right. So I'm going to go with Revenge of the Sith as my favorite of those. And his performance in that, I think, was really stellar, right? Star Wars. So that's number five. Number four is The Negotiator with Kevin Spacey. And it was one of those movies that I just kind of stumbled across. I think it was on, I wasn't planning on watching it, but I ended up, you know, having it on. It came on TV and I really enjoyed it. And like a lot of movies with Sam Jackson, it's, he makes the movie. It wouldn't really be the same film if he wasn't part of it. So that's number four. Number three is Shaft. I love that I actually like his version of Shaft better than the original, mainly because I could relate to the time period a little bit more. And I like that the original Shaft, you know, Richard Roundtree is in his, kind of like passing the torch in a way, to Sam Jackson's Shaft. I love that one. With, you know, Christian Bale is in that too, and Toni Collette. It's a great movie. And number four is this movie, or number three, or two, excuse me, I'm going reverse. Number two is this movie, Die Hard with a Vengeance. Love that his character in that. And number one is Pulp Fiction. You know, just the opening scene alone with him. But then when we see him again towards the end of the film, he steals the show. It's my favorite of his movies.
All right. Very cool. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. Go to everything-history.com. And that's the home base for the Everything's a Primary Source. Everything is a Primary Source, everything you can find there. So link to, of course, the podcast, but also you'll find some teaching and learning resources there. And you will also find links to my different social media presence. So everything-history.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rap Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to shoot me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movierob.net. Until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
When it comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.